warning, warning, this truth of the head, it gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Tune in this Friday to hear L. Brent Bozell of the Media Research Center right here talk about this. Get this, a newsflash, the media is liberal. That'll be fun. Of course, our audience agrees with that, but it'll be enjoyable to hear Brent's specific charges against the liberal media. And I will argue with Brent, we'll see if it goes anywhere, that the media should not be neutral on any significant moral or political issue. Everyone, reporters and everyone, we all have the responsibility to be on the side of right, whatever right is at the time. Okay, so that's Friday. Today, this is a sequel to a show we did a couple weeks ago with Hussein Ibish. Now, Hussein is the former communications director for the American Arab Anti-Defamation Committee. And he's currently the Washington correspondent for the Daily Star, an Arab newspaper. If you have watched cable news at all during the entire war in Iraq and preceding that, you've seen Hussein many times as a spokesman against America's effort in Iraq. But then we wanted to invite him back to talk about the Israeli-Palestinian issue. Hussein Ibish, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Well, I'm glad to be with you. I didn't see myself as a spokesman against our efforts in Iraq, but I did think the war was a mistake.
Well, okay, against the war.
I would have phrased it a little differently.
Well, thank
against
you.
Against the policy, sir.
Thank you for clarifying. In fact, Hussein, we so enjoyed the conversation with you last time. There was some give and take, and there was actually listening on both sides that we thought immediately it'd be great to talk about the bigger issue, actually, of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict with you.
That'd be great.
So could we start this way? If you recall a couple of weeks ago, I said, Hussein, you start us out. Give us a two-minute thumbnail of why you think we shouldn't have gone to war in Iraq. What I'd like to do is now give you a two-minute thumbnail of why I take Israel's side over the Palestinian side in the current conflict.
Or the other way around. Well, I mean, I think
No, Hussein, I'm saying I'd like to start with two-minute overview.
Oh, okay, sure.
All
I
right?
understand. Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, okay. I've been to Israel just a few times over the last 5 years or so, and I believe from studying the issue that Israel has a right to the land, and contrary to what many Americans think and Europeans, that Israel never stole a country from the Palestinians. There was no Palestinian country to steal. Rather, after Israel became a nation again in 1948, after repeated attacks from Arab armies from countries around them, they eventually took the Golan Heights from Syria, not from the Palestinians. They took the West Bank from Jordan, not from the Palestinians. And they took the Gaza Strip from Egypt, not from the Palestinians, because these were countries that repeatedly attacked them. And so the Palestinians, when I speak with them, they don't even recognize, for example, Palestinian school children are taught in government schools there with Middle Eastern maps that don't even list Israel as a nation. They don't believe there was ever a Jewish temple in Jerusalem, for example, the one that the Romans destroyed 2,000 years ago. So there's a complete lack of historical context in the Palestinian passion to stop the existence of the State of Israel. So Hussein, I'd like to start there.
Okay, well, I think that there are a number of very serious factual inaccuracies in what you said. But before we get into that, because I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to argue over history, let me point out that the area of the world known as Palestine, Israel and the occupied territories, 100 years ago was a country that was virtually entirely occupied by Arabs, by Palestinian Muslims and Christians, and that the Jewish Israelis have come into that area, and there's about 5 million of them. They are settlers or immigrants or their descendants who came to that country in order to establish a Jewish state in a place where there was overwhelmingly a non-Jewish population.
Yeah, there were Arabs.
There was
violent... Let me agree with you.
Let me just agree with you
as you're making these points.
All right. Well,
all right.
Let me say there was a violent conflict.
Okay.
Beginning in the early 20s, there was a violent conflict between the Israeli settlers, or the Jewish settlers, certainly the to-be Israelis, and the local Palestinian Muslims and Christians on the one hand, and both of them with the British colonial authorities who ruled the area between the wars. Now, as a result of this conflict, the State of Israel has come into being, and you're right that in 1967, Israel acquired the West Bank, Gaza Strip, Golan Heights, and East Jerusalem from the various different Arab countries. Golan Heights actually was part of Syria. The others were under Jordanian and Egyptian administration. But the history is less important than the present reality.
Well,
the present reality.
Hussein, all right, Hussein Ibish, I want us to interact here.
Yeah.
And so historically, you've agreed then, you've at least confirmed, and you're a spokesman for Arab Americans to some extent. So it's good to have
not
you.
Anymore,
it's okay. Well, it's good to have you on this show.
Yeah.
Confirm that there was no Palestinian country that the Jews stole, but after repeated attacks from Arab armies.
There's one of your factual inaccuracies.
Go ahead.
There was no Palestinian state.
Yeah.
Because there were no state. There were no nation states in the Middle East before the end of the First World War. The entire thing was controlled by the Ottoman Empire. Palestine was created as a state to be after the First World War, along with all the states that came into existence, right? The United Nations determined that Palestine should be partitioned, but only the Jewish Israeli state came into being. The Palestinian state never came into existence for historical reasons that are both very simple and very complex. The complexity comes from the way in which the physical conflict and the wars came about. The political reality is that the Israeli state did not, intended to occupy the entire space of Eretz Israel, which in fact, in practice, it has done for the past 35 years.
Hussein, back up to two of the claims I made, and let us know if you think they're true.
The repeated attacks claim, that's
one. Well, I wasn't thinking of that one. But yes, Arab countries surrounding Israel, beginning on the day that Israel became a nation in 1948, have attacked Israel. And eventually, Israel took a buffer zone between the land it had controlled and those states because they continued to attack.
There were three wars between 1948 and 1967. The first was the 1948 war. That actually began in 1947. It was an internal conflict between the Jewish Israelis, or the soon-to-be Israelis, and the local Palestinians, that grew into a campaign of ethnic cleansing against the Palestinians. And there was, on the day that the British withdrew, I mean, you could say on the Day of Independence, but actually it was the day the British forces withdrew from Palestine, Arab armies intervened to try to save the Palestinians from the fate that befell them. They were unable to do it.
They were
smaller in number, less well-organized and less well-armed than the Israeli forces.
All right,
and it failed completely.
Hussein, one point at a time.
I'm just going to tell you the three wars. In 1956, Israel attacked Egypt in 1956. And in 1967, Israel again attacked Egypt. So to say that Israel was repeatedly attacked is, I think, false. The only one you can claim is in 1948. There was a half-hearted and ineffective intervention in what had been a civil war, and it's too bad.
Well, I think, Hussein, last time in the last show a couple weeks ago...
So this is sort of mythological.
You and I had one factual dispute
in
the last show, and right after the show, we went on our website, and we quoted from a UN resolution when I said that the no-fly zones in Iraq are legal based on the ceasefire agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that they weren't.
They're not, yeah.
And so I posted, in fact...
Right, I read it, yeah.
Yeah, it's still up there. UN Security Council, right. Ceasefire Resolution 687, Item 34, gives this open-ended authority to the allies to, quote, take further steps as may be required to secure peace and security in the area. You can't get more open-ended than that.
Yeah, but what it refers to, here's the problem. It refers to peace and security between states, not within the borders of a sovereign state. And if you read the whole resolution and all the other resolutions, it insists very clearly on Iraq's sovereignty and territorial integrity. So I think it would be extremely difficult to read that part of that resolution.
It says the part
authorizing.
All right, the part
that. And in fact, all right, if you were to assemble, hold on, let me just finish my point. If you were to assemble a group of international lawyers, I think very few, if any, would agree with your interpretation.
The quote that I just read you from this resolution says to secure peace and security in the area. It doesn't authorize only security within neighboring countries. The very quote I read you, it's very open-ended and broad. And for 10 years, did the UN introduce resolutions saying America had no right?
No, of course not.
So this is an example.
Because the United States has a veto.
Did they introduce resolutions we vetoed? Hussein, here's my point.
Well, not condemning the United States. It's just not, no one bothers with it.
All right, this is what I'd like to do. I don't know if you'd be willing to.
Yeah.
But I'd like to challenge you on your rendition of the historical facts. And in a month or so from now, do another show on those three wars.
With pleasure.
Okay.
With enormous pleasure.
Okay, so we...
In fact, I'll go further. I'll base everything I say strictly on Israeli sources. I won't use American sources and I won't use Palestinian sources. I'll use only Israeli historians.
That's slightly dubious.
My point. How's that?
It's slightly dubious since there are American sources that hate America and Israeli sources that hate Israel.
No. I'm talking
about
professors at Oxford University and
yeah, they're the kinds of people I just referred to. But
I think the leading historians in the field you shouldn't dismiss what they say.
I think historians are biased. Hussein, I think they're biased.
Let's put it this way. The history is not disputed. The history I mentioned,
all right.
Frankly, is not in dispute, except for what happened leading up to the War of 1948.
Okay, now let's back up. When I go to the Old City and sit for 2 hours at a Palestinian restaurant and talk to the owner and his kids, and they believe that there was never a Jewish temple in Jerusalem, that none ever existed. What I believe is that there's such a lack of historical perspective among Palestinians that they can't possibly see that the Jews have any connection to the land. They deny that they were there.
Well, I think it's certainly possible to find lots of people on the pro-Palestinian side, including Palestinians, lots of people on the pro-Israeli side who deny each other's claims and historical experiences, and that's a tragedy, and it's part of the problem. It's certainly no problem to find among Jewish Israelis arguments that there's no such thing as the Palestinian people, they don't exist, they're just a concoction, it's a plot against Israel. They weren't there when the Jewish settling began in the early part of the 20th century or late 19th century.
Of course they were there. They were there, not nearly.
Well, there are a lot of people who say they weren't there.
Well, that I've been on the air for 15 years taking all kinds of debates. I haven't heard that.
Well, I'll tell you who says that. Joan Peters, in a book that's been repeatedly reproduced by Harcourt Brace, has a book called From Time Immemorial. She claims there's no such thing as a Palestinian.
Well, all kinds of stupid...
Alan Dershowitz endorses that claim. There are lots of people out there who will make that claim.
All kinds of ignorant people,
Israeli leaders,
including Dershowitz, believes...
Golda Meir, the Prime Minister of Israel, said there's no such thing as a Palestinian.
Okay, now let me ask you, Hussein, let me ask you this.
They used to say such things.
All right, a second question. When I said that Palestinian children are taught in government schools there, geography with maps that do not include Israel, as though it doesn't exist. Am I making that up? Or am I misinformed?
You're not making it up. What you're doing is you're slightly confused. In the occupied territories before 1996, there really weren't any Palestinian-controlled schools, and there were no Palestinian-authored textbooks. Textbooks, old and totally outdated and very bad textbooks from Egypt and Jordan, sort of hand-me-downs from the 50s and 60s were being used in schools there. And in those books, there are those kind of things that you talk about. There's the omission of Israel and what have you. In the new books that have been created by the Palestinian Authority since 1996, there certainly is reference to Israel, and there's a whole history. And, you know, those people who've studied this, including Nathan Brown of George Washington and various different credible people, have found that there are real problems with both the Israeli curriculum and the Palestinian curriculum. Well, in that
I have no doubt
the experience of one side is favored over another.
But all right, I have no doubt.
That are generally made, hold on, yeah. The claims that are generally made that Palestinians are being prepared for war and hatred by their school curriculum, I think, is no longer true. I think
okay, well, let me ask you this. Well, If there's a general,
Israelis are also.
If there's a general sense of history, how could it be that, and I'm speaking to successful Palestinian businessmen and their families,
yeah,
and they don't believe that there was a Jewish temple in Jerusalem, which is a central part of world history if you're an atheist, Herod's temple and the temple before
yeah, I know,
that.
I understand what you mean.
Why
would people believe that? Well, I mean, I think that there's a lot of ordinary people, including educated people, believe a lot of idiotic things because they feel it convenient to do so. Like I said, there are plenty of people on the other side who also make these grand historical errors.
I'd like to
take a step back myself.
Yeah.
And I'd like to make a point that I haven't been able to make because you started us off in this direction. Is that all right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, what I want to say is that what is more important than the history and the ideology is the fundamental reality here. In this country, between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea, whatever you want to call it, there are two equally numbered groups of people. There are about 6 million Jewish Israelis and about 6 million Palestinian Muslims and Christians. And most of the Palestinians who live there are not citizens of the state that rules them or any other state. They're totally disenfranchised. They have no right to vote. They have no basic human freedoms. They live under conditions that are at least as bad as what existed in South African apartheid. And obviously, when you have this kind of situation, you're going to have a conflict. This is the reality over the past 35
years. Obviously, it's
and
like...
That is basically what is going on.
Like,
there is no... It
Hussein,
is not... You know, the occupation...
Hussein,
is
let me agree with you once in a while,
if you
could pause. Obviously, living in the Gaza or the West Bank is similar to living in hell. It's miserable. And at... Yasser Arafat said to Geraldo Rivera, what's his name? Geraldo Rivera.
Yeah.
He said that at Camp David, he made what he thinks was the biggest mistake in his life in turning down Israel's offer for basically 98% of the land they were asking for. And the reason I think he turned it down is because there's a widespread ignorance of the historical perspective among the entire Arab community, the Arab street, not just Palestinians, that the Jews have no place in the Middle East, as though they have no connection there. And if there's widespread complete ignorance of the historical reality, when the Jews get slaughtered in Europe, and so they long for a home where they could defend themselves, it makes historical and legal sense for them to look back to their original homeland. And when the UN, you admit it, there was no Palestinian country there. And so it was under the British mandate, and the UN, the world, agreed that Israel should be given land there,
yeah,
and the Arab nations disagreed.
The Palestinians were, in effect, made to pay the price for the Nazi Holocaust. In other words, the world, seeing what the decimation of the Jews of Europe at the hands of the evil Nazis, wanted to partition a country that had a solid three-quarters Arab majority and give half of it to a one-quarter minority in order to create a Jewish state. And this is something that sat well with the conscience of the rest of the world, but didn't sit very well with Palestinians or other Arabs. Both positions are understandable. I understand why the world took the position it did. I certainly understand why Palestinians said at the time, you know, we shouldn't be the ones to pay the price. We have an overwhelming majority in our country, and we don't want to partition our country. In fact, as far as I know, that's the only time a country has been partitioned against the overwhelming, the opinion of the overwhelming majority.
When I look at Israel and Palestine,
yeah,
and I see their the different response. For example, when a Jewish extremist goes and shoots a Palestinian driving down the road to his wife, I see turmoil and pain as the basic response of the Israeli people. And they despise and they hunt down the murderers and they prosecute them. Of course, there's extremists who want to kill Palestinians. But with Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, what I see in on video, I could see it on CNN, is celebration in the streets when suicide bombers kill even women and children. So what,
yes, you're right. In fact, on both sides of the equation, actually, there has been a hardening of the hearts. It's very distressing. I mean, I think that, you know, the equation you draw is it misses out on the systematic violence performed by the Israeli military against Palestinian civilians, and no measure that has been taken has won any opposition over the past 3 years from the Israeli public. But
well,
do
you agree with this, Hussein? The difference is the Palestinian terrorist groups are intentionally targeting civilians.
Yeah, the Israeli military also.
The Israeli military is
yeah, when the Israeli military, as they did a few weeks ago, uses helicopter gunships to rocket a crowd of unarmed demonstrators in Gaza, that is brutal murder. And that's not different.
You're referring to I think if I'm right, you're referring to the account that I read, a step-by-step account of what happened, where there were armed gunmen in a parade marching toward an Israeli military position, and the Israelis fired about a dozen shots into an empty building to warn them to stop. They didn't stop, and then one shot went through the building into the group and killed a handful of people. When you
if we're talking about the same thing, the account you've read is ludicrous. What happened was there was a large demonstration of people, and two Israeli helicopter gunships swooped down and fired.
Same account.
Into the crowd. I mean, look,
same account. There was video. Hussein, there was video of that episode. Video.
The incident I'm talking about is on video. And in fact, you know, every human rights group that's looked into this has made it very clear. And all the serious reporters, excuse me, who've done good work, including Israeli human rights groups and Israeli reporters, have found that the Israeli army, as you would expect, as it inevitably would have to, trying to put down an uprising of an entire population, has inflicted casualties on women and children.
So you believe?
So you believe
it's?
And I think you know.
Hussein, I want you to clarify that point.
Let me just make one final point.
No, I want you to clarify the point you just made. You believe that the Israeli armed forces have an intentional policy to target women and children, innocent civilians.
From time to time, without question. Yes.
That's bizarre. That is absolutely bizarre.
The effort, let me explain
just like America, just like our army, the effort we've gone in Iraq, we have done more to protect Iraqi civilians than the
United States.
And so have the so has the IDF.
You can't make the leap.
The IDF
is a leap that's completely improper. Well, I'm not talking about the United States. The Israeli military.
The Israeli.
And I think if you look at the work that's been done by Israeli human rights groups like B'Tselem, if you read the reports in the Israeli press like Haaretz, Yediot Ahronot, etc., it becomes extremely clear that the Israeli government, because of the position it's taking, that it wishes to enforce a military tyranny over a foreign people outside its own borders,
and so that's
is forced to resort to indiscriminate violence against civilians.
So that's why at Camp David, Israel offered 98% of the land.
Of course, they didn't do that. Now, there's a tremendous set of myths about this. What the Israelis offered was much further than they had ever gone before. But, you know, you can only come to a figure like 98% if you make all kinds of contortions, like you remove municipal East Jerusalem from the picture altogether.
Give us the accurate percentage.
What Barak was actually proposing was to allow Palestinians to create a nominal state in about 92-93% of the occupied territories. Yeah. But the state would have been broken into at least five pieces. It would have been nominally independent, but not really independent. It wouldn't have controlled its airspace or its electromagnetic spectrum or its borders. It would have had a veto, the Israelis would have had a veto on its diplomatic and military activities, And, you know, it would have been a kind of state in name only.
And
it's
on
not
top
independent.
Of, on top
and
of all that, the Palestinians would have been a lot further along living in peace with the Jews and with the entire world. Well, let me ask you this. Is there a policy?
Let me say, you're right. I agree with you. They would have been further along. And, you know, the thing to do was to keep negotiating. And, in fact, that's what happened.
Let me ask you this.
The negotiations continued until January of 2001, when the Israeli election was announced and the talks were put on hold because of the Israeli election. But the last conference, which was in January 2001 at Taba, was universally regarded as the one where the most progress ever was made. So the talks were going forward in a very serious way. They were cut off, really, because Sharon got elected, and the Israelis have not been willing to come back to the table ever since, and that's a tragedy.
We were there during this current intifada. While we were there, two massive explosions, one in Jerusalem, killed a number of people at a shopping center. And so
terrible.
When things like that are happening, when Israel offered the 92% of the land, instead, Arafat rejected it, and the current intifada began. I'd like you to let me know if this is true or false. When Arab media takes surveys of public opinion, the terrorist, well, we call them terrorist groups because we believe they're murderers.
Well, I would agree with that definition of Hamas, certainly.
Okay, the groups that have a policy, the groups that have a policy not of coexistence with Israel, but of the utter elimination of Israel, those groups enjoy significant public support from Palestinians.
Yeah, about 20%. They've never been able to break through, even at the worst phase, they've never really been able to break through the 23, 24. That's the highest point they've gotten. Usually, under good times, they languish around 17, 18%. When things are bad, it goes up to maybe 23, 24%. It's much stronger in Gaza than it is in the West Bank, but those are the overall figures. Israeli groups who want no coexistence with Palestinians are in the cabinet. They're in the government. And the current minister of tourism wants to ethnically cleanse all Arabs from all of Israel and the occupied territories. So you're looking at two societies in which extremists from the fringe are having a lot more influence than they should, and that they're... a political stance should allow them, in my opinion.
Because if the Palestinians are not able to say, we want to live at peace with Israel, if they're not able to do that, to come to that position, then any amount of military force necessary targeted at militants should be supported. As the pastor of a Christian church, Denver Bible Church, I support the use of any force necessary to stop the hostilities, to defend Israel.
You could just as easily flip that around and say, look, as long as the Palestinians live in unfreedom and live under this brutal military tyranny, military dictatorship, a foreign military occupation, then, I support whatever
is
necessary.
Well, here's the difference. Israel has offered them. Israel has offered them a branch of freedom, liberty after liberty, compared to the current situation.
I think you're wrong about that. If you were fighting for an independent state, and they told you, you can have your independent state, but it'll be broken into five pieces, you won't control your own borders, you won't control your own airspace, you won't control your electromagnetic spectrum, we have a veto on your diplomatic and military activities, we'll say who can come and go, and you guys basically have to ask our permission for everything. So you can have a post office and a flag and an anthem, but that's about it. I don't think you'd go for it. And that's what was put on the table by Barak.
All right. Hussein Ibish, we're out of time. In a few weeks, we'll do the three wars, all right?
That sounds good.
Okay, I appreciate that. And a post office, a flag, and an emblem. How about an armed police force? Was it all symbol? No, it was a step toward living together in peace. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.